Hello, guys. This is Eddie with The Filmlosophers, and we are here with a special episode for all you spookity spooks and you haunting haunters. We here at The Filmlosophers have decided to pull together to create a really awesome and fun Halloween episode for you. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, the mean green beatboxing machine. Okay. Spencer Williams.
Yeah, that's not even remotely accurate.
It's close. I mean,
it's not even remotely close.
You make noises with your mouth.
That's there true we go, for everyone see? On the planet.
And speaking of noisy, we also have with us our intern, intern slash stenographer slash part-timer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I need to be nice to you slash
which
I probably
you're
won't.
Doing a spectacular job.
I know.
The nice part.
Slash goodness. Ensign Amy.
Yeah, this might as well just be a slasher because that's a lot of slashes.
That is a lot of slashes. And also with us, friend of the show and my brother, film aficionado, Ben is with us as well.
Yes, I am. I am here for a while. So
yeah. Easier for a while, apparently.
Yes, a while. Thank you for inviting me, by the way. Much appreciated.
Whatever that means. Yeah. we got a great show. We've been talking about this for a while, and we've been wanting to do something special, and we happen to have the cool opportunity of recording and dropping this episode on Halloween. So while you're doing your driving around, while you're doing your trick-or-treating, while you're even doing your candy handing outing, all that good stuff, you can hear us in your ears, so we're glad to be here along for the ride. You can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out over on our website. All of our great episodes, 300 plus allegedly. We got everything from action, comedy, romance, and of course horror, as we will be talking about that soon. Over there, you can check out all those episodes there. You can also check us out on any place where we stream podcasts, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, TuneIn, and iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire wherever you're listening. Just look for us on your podcast app. Put in The Filmlosophers, listen in, give us a subscribe and a follow. We'll give you the social links at the end. Like I said, this is a really fun and unique episode as we will be taking our turns talking about some of the movies that we really want to highlight pertaining to the spooktacular, the wonderful, the incredible holiday of Halloween. In terms of this table, who here is an avid fan of Halloween here? Is it just me? Am I the only one who's like spouting here?
Yes.
it varies really because it depends on the movie that's coming out at that time. So like for me it's clowns, so if it's a clown movie then yeah, I'll be excited for it. If there's not, then I'll
specifically
like,
specifically the holiday.
Holiday.
Yeah, yeah, holiday.
Spencer, are you the Halloween Grinch?
No. There's already a movie about that I was supposed to watch.
You were
Halloween is Grinch night.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't like I cared a lot when I was a kid about, like, you know, trick-or-treating and candy. But then at some point, I was able to buy my own candy, and then I lost all interest.
And you realized
you had adult money, huh?
Yeah.
You had that candy money, man.
I don't need the candy.
Yeah, that's almost everybody where you get money in your hand finally, and you're working, and you're like, yeah, it's like, ooh, I don't have to wait up for Halloween to get candy now. It's like, I don't have to...
It's like, I don't have to wait till birthdays for gifts anymore. I don't have to wait for Christmas to wait for what I want.
So long, suckers. I'm not walking the streets for candy anymore.
That sounded so scary.
That's
what we do to children every year.
Hey, they have a chaperone. Oh, wait. That makes it worse.
Go ask that man for candy. And if they also have a loaf of bread, too.
Halloween
is always, for me, it's always kind of like, I don't know, I hold the fall holidays in very high esteem. Fall to winter, Halloween is a very special time. It's an opportunity for people to just have fun, dress up how they want, not be judged, just kids having a great time.
You mean Comic-Con?
Yes. It's
winter Comic Con.
Well, I mean,
it's winter.
There's conventions during the winter and fall. So
yeah.
Well, SinisterCon just passed, didn't it?
Sinister Creature Con. Yes. Shout out to Tim. He did a great job. I hear if you listen, Tim is the man with a plan who runs the entire events for Sinister Creature Con as well as other great spookity events that happen around Sacramento. But I don't know. Halloween is one of those ones where not only do you have the opportunity to, as Amy mentioned, yes, you can dress up, you can have fun, you can do, you know, you can have fun activities with kids, with families. Not to mention, it's also an opportunity for communities to come together, put on events like trunk or treats, put on events like, you know, putting out candy for kids to come through during the neighborhood as they beg for candy, as their parents are hoping that they like drop in $20 bills as well, according to Spencer. You also have a great time of the year where some of the biggest inspirations for movies comes about. To have a whole month themed around the idea of horror and scares and the element of kind of like just really feeling alive. I know I hold a very true...
The element of feeling alive?
Yeah, and I'll explain.
A lot of this is like dead things.
That you know of.
Okay.
Not everything's dead.
I mean, most of them aren't.
No.
Could be from space.
Zombies are dead.
I mean,
vampires are
dead. I'm pretty sure if you were a chaperone and you brought a dead child to somebody's house for trick-or-treating, you'd be suspect.
Oh, that's what you mean.
But I'm just talking about like an opportunity where like the inspirations really liven up some of the more considerable like cookie cutter most movies, like the genres. Not that they're all cookie cutter, but horror is always seems to be the one that kind of changes things just a bit to create a much more suspenseful movie. You take, for instance, a movie about two guys who are locked in a room and can't get out. That's you know, that can be a comedy or whatever, but then you add in the effect that there's a dead guy in the middle of the room and you immediately have a horror movie and a very much unique premise. You know, it's much different than what you would expect. A lot of these movies that have come up throughout history have either some hold from inspirations of Halloween to even just inspirations from other cultures' holidays that reflect Halloween and that horror aspect. So we're going to talk about some of those movies. We did some homework. The Filmlosophers did a little bit of homework over the course of the month, and we went and we kind of dug around and kind of did some research in looking for films pertaining to specific genres about Halloween. Now, I did give each one of them parameters. They were not happy with them. I can attest to that.
No, I was not. How hard
it is to figure this out.
So the parameters were, number one, it either had to focus on or around Halloween. Number two, it had to actually be released in theaters. Now, there was a caveat that one of their options could be a TV movie if the choices were limited. And last but not least, it couldn't be a limited release or special event in theaters. So it couldn't be something like, oh, we're going to show, you know, Ichabod Crane in the 1940s. Ichabod Crane?
Ichabod.
Ichabod. Nobody cares.
It
could be whatever was done once in a movie theater because it was like a special event. We're talking about actual films or actual, since we were talking about TV once, it had to be an actual movie made for TV.
Yeah.
So with that said, we're going to kind of jump right into this. And mind you, a lot of these are our own personal opinions. We're not saying it's the truth about like the best of them all. Mm-mm. But these are ones we wanted to highlight based around the holiday. And I really feel like there's a lot we can say pertaining to these movies. So first one that's up is the family genre. Mm. We had to find a movie that was based around the family aspect.
You could watch it with somebody under the age of 7.
Yes, and they won't have nightmares that you'll have to pay for a therapist to fix.
Yep.
So I'll go ahead and jump first. One of my favorite, absolute favorite family movies that has always been one that I've seen in my household when I was younger, and now that I've gotten older, I still watch it, and you know, I enjoy the heck out of it, is 1987's The Monster Squad. The Monster Squad is a great film that if you haven't seen it, where have you been? Like, honestly, what have you been doing with your time? Back in 1987, at the height of what was typical slasher horror, monster-esque type movies going on, there was a small little film done by Fred Decker who wanted to create something that not only kids could relate to and have fun with, but adults could still find the humor in as well. Think modern day Shrek. It's got elements of, you know, profanity and kid jokes. It's got monsters and it's got Everything else, it's got Nazis. It's got a lot going for it. But I remember watching this movie way back when, and one of the first things you notice, you're like, hey, it's got like the typical, like, quote unquote, universal monsters. Unfortunately, there was something different about it because a lot of those monsters could not be replicated because it was not a universal movie. So they had to actually tweak certain parts of each creature just ever so slightly so that it wasn't exactly a replica of the universal monsters, but it was somewhat close. Mm-hmm.
You would know that that's what it is.
Exactly. Okay. The creature from the Black Lagoon, the Gillman. it looked just slightly different in this variation. The Wolfman didn't look anything like Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
You know, you had all these different ones like Bela Lugosi's Dracula. This one looked completely different. Its mannerisms was completely different. Even Frankenstein, I believe, had a different location for his bolts, yeah. I believe, in this one. But still, like, this movie has so many great moments, and it has a lot of great highlights for, like, you know, Mummy in My Closet kind of moments, or the iconic moment where everybody gets a kick, no pun intended, where you have two of the main character kids in a haunted house and they're being cornered by Wolfman, and one of them's like, kick him in the nards, kick him in the nards.
Yep.
Like, what? Kick him in the nards. And then he kicks him as hard as he can between the legs, and the Wolfman grabs his crotch and goes down, and the little kid goes, whoa, Wolfman's got nards. So, I mean, but that's typical 80s. That's like the fun element of it. That's like part of the humor of it all. I don't know. Did you guys see this movie when you guys were younger?
Not when I was younger, no.
I can second not when I was younger, but it was still entertaining when I did see it.
Yeah, same. Like, I saw it like, five, six, 7 years ago, somewhere around that time frame.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, I watch it every year still.
Well, that's one of us.
I guess I'm going to have to like just start doing it then.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Once, like you said, 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies that I actually have the soundtrack to it on a collector's edition in vinyl in my room.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I pull it out every so often to re-listen to it. But it's one of those ones where when I think family Halloween movies, I think Monster Squad. It rings true to me for that. I don't know. What about you guys? What do you guys say, see as a family Halloween movie?
Well, as a family, we didn't really watch a whole lot of Halloween movies, so I was just always like left to my own devices. But one that like stood out in my mind is Ernest Scared Stupid.
Yeah.
It's a dumb movie. But it has Eartha Kitt, who
is amazing.
Elevates the movie, even though it's should just be garbage and just nonsense that's forgotten. But she is so delightful in this woman. Mm-hmm. In this movie. I love her. And like, it's even better that she was Catwoman at one point. Yes. Now she's in this movie.
Yeah.
It's really a nice movie. It did give me like a little bit of scares with like trolls going after children.
Yeah.
And like turning them into little wooden dolls. But like, I got over that.
I have to admit, Ernest Scared Stupid was the first movie where I saw the mimicking voice gag being done by the antagonist, where the troll in all of his ugly glory is using the voice of the children that he's already turned into wooden dolls. And it's like that reminds me of like that whole scene from Annihilation. And it's like, this is where they got it from. Like, Ernest Scared Stupid did it first, kind of thing.
Well, I remember that one scene where this like little girl is like, she knows that there's something out there, but she's staying in her room, like being all safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then like,
you know, oh, and she even checks under her bed because
she won't check under the bed. She has mom too, but she's like in the middle of her bed. She's and all hunched up and like,
that
go, girl.
Mom was a horrible mom.
Yes,
terrible.
Like, seriously, are you kidding? What was her name? Elizabeth? Are you kidding, Elizabeth? We need to go. We gotta go to the whatever. And she's like, this child's literally frightened in bed, and it's like, this child's on the verge of having a panic attack. Like, just check under the dang bed.
This was not my kid. And if I had seen this, I'd have been like, oh no, something's actually wrong.
Yeah.
What's happening? What was your day? What's like what?
Yeah, right? Like, this child is traumatized, obviously.
Yeah.
And you're all worried about getting to the school for whatever costume contest that's going on.
Which she's going to lose, by the way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Don't know why she thinks she's in the running.
But that's such a great movie. And the fact that it's one of Jim Varney's finest moments as that Ernest character. I mean, we have the first one, Ernest Goes to Jail. That was fun. But all the other ones in between, I honestly don't remember any other Jim Varney movie.
I actually only remember those two as well. That's the jail one, and this one, and that's it.
Yeah. I don't recall any other ones. But I know that he has always, like, it seems like that character was like a love letter for himself. Like, he loved embodying the fullness of that character. And in this movie specifically, he does that ultra well. Yeah. And if you're not familiar with who Jim Varney is, Jim Varney was the person who voiced Slinky Dog in the first Toy Story. First and second. And then he passed away.
Oh, I did not know that.
Did he complete the second? Because I know the guy that played, and this is going to be weird because I never remembered this guy's name, but he's the guy that played Sean's dad in Boy Meets World, who was one of his best friends.
Well, he's also the same guy who plays the dad we were just talking about in 51st States.
That's right. Yeah. So he is the dad in 51st States.
Yeah, he was able to do Toy Story 2.
Okay, so Varney wasn't too thing.
Yeah, because his last one, his last movie, so to speak, was his last big movie was Atlantis. He played Cookie.
Yes. So he was a very good Cookie.
Apparently there was an Ernest
Atlantis the Lost Empire. He was the guy with the beans that had all the tattoos on his stomach, and when he smacked it, he could make all 50 states dance.
And
Atlantis the Lost Empire. Yeah. Don't make that face.
I'm so sorry.
Story alone, like, wow. Without the context that it's a cartoon, you're like, yeah, it's the guy who's got, you know, he's a cook, he's got all these tattoos, and then he slaps his belly and everything starts moving. It's like, hey, you know, just
it's a family movie, can you tell?
Well, the best part is he's super skinny too when he does that, and the animation is so hilarious.
Well, it's Jim,
it's Jim Varney. That's the thing.
I mean, Jim Varney was such a great actor and performer, and the fact that he really went above and beyond for this role, especially like a lot of the additional, I almost want to call it, what's it called? Schizophrenic moments where he's like multiple different people. It's hilarious.
And doesn't even make any dang sense.
Doesn't.
Is this kid just standing there waiting for costume changes between wigs and outfits?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But no, Ernest Scared Stupid is such a great movie. Such a great family movie. Did anyone have anyone else that they wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I don't because okay. Well, there's the DCOM, that the dreaded DCOM, but it's not my favorite, so okay. I don't want to talk about it.
Talk about things you like.
I know. Also, they're getting knife hand. Was that the knife hand?
I'm looking at the notes here, and I'm like, I don't see a DCOM. But if you have a DCOM, I guess you want to throw it in there.
No.
Wait, hold on. Hold the phone, Spencer. Yeah. Are you trying to wedge in your own agenda in the show again?
Nope.
She literally did this on the last episode.
No, I didn't.
We were like, only two choices. And then she goes off with six choices. And you know, and I wasn't going to mention so-and-so who does this and that. And I wasn't going to mention so-and-so who does X, Y, and Z. And I definitely wasn't going to mention so-and-so. I'm just going to stick with my two choices.
But I didn't. I made you. I made you watch that horrible Halloween. The Disney Channel original movie. It's not my favorite. I'm going to go with 2018's Eli Roth's The House with the Clock in Its Walls.
Yeah.
Jack Black, Kate Blanchett. Story follows a newly orphaned little boy named Lewis who ends up having to be sent to his uncle's house. His uncle is Jack Black, whose name is Jonathan, who actually has Kate Blanchett, Florence. I think it's that his like she's not his maid.
No, she's just his friend who comes by.
I thought it was a neighbor.
Yeah,
that's right. But basically, Lewis finds out that the house that his uncle Jonathan lives in was originally owned by some bad people. His former friend who was suffering from PTSD during World War II, and his witch of a wife, Selena. I'm not a witch. I'm your wife. And so I couldn't help it. But so they're also trying to find a legitimate clock inside the walls. It's supposed to be ringing about the end of the world. And it's spooky and it's fun. And Kate Blanchett is wonderful.
She's great.
And the color saturation and the palette's really nice. It doesn't have too many overly scary moments in it. There's a little bit of the macabre. Considering it's Eli Roth, there was more of an expectation that this was actually going to be like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And it's not, which I can totally recommend for people that are over the age of six.
And honestly, it's kind of a surprise for a lot of folks who have seen Eli Roth's work prior to, because Eli Roth is also the same man who did the Hostel movies.
That's a big gap, okay, that makes sense.
And that's why you were like looking at me like Eli Roth, it sounds familiar, and then as soon as he's like Hostel, you're like, oh wait, I got that.
Yeah, well, I never would have figured it was the same guy that did this same movie director. Because it's like totally different. And it was good.
This movie is so chill compared to Hostel.
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Also, the house is amazing.
Yeah, he was a producer for the Grindhouse movies he did.
I'm not a horror person, but even though you're like the Grindhouse movies, I'm like, nope.
So he did 1 and 2 on Grindhouse. He did The Green Inferno. He did Knock Knock, the one with Keanu Reeves. Yeah. This is actually his first non-R-rated movie. So
yay! Wow. And I think they're supposed to be making a sequel.
Yes.
Wee.
I don't know if they're making a sequel, but I can definitely look up that.
Last I heard, they were, because I know it's based on a book. Hold on. The Googles will not work for me.
Well, hopefully they keep the same cast, though, too, because that would suck if they switch out people.
True, yeah. But it's Eli Roth. I don't know if he's wanting to really revisit that. I know the last movie he did, he's been doing a lot more in podcasting and shows for, like, Shudder. He does one called A History of Horror with Eli Roth, which is a really good one.
Well, if they pay him enough, though, he'll probably come back, right? Obviously, you would think so.
By the way, I have with me...
Uh-oh.
The Monster Squad.
Here, I thought you were just really blowing hot air.
No, it's a 2 vinyl whole little thing from Mondo.
How many does it carry?
Nice.
And actually,
internet folks, you can't see it.
And actually, the vinyls are colored. So,
different colors.
I believe
red color.
One's red. One's another color. I believe
it has the hands on the back, like you would read at the back of a like comic book. Yeah.
Wow.
So. Yes. Cool. Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, do I need to pass this on? I have to share.
I mean, if you want, or you're not going
to. Yeah. So, by the way, there is a second book to The House with the Clock in Its Walls because it is based on a book, but there is no current sequel in the works that is movie.
Hold on. I got a question. So, how much does each vinyl carry? How many songs does each vinyl carry?
It says on the back.
Well, since they're two-sided.
Yeah.
And they are the color of the emerald from the movie.
It's a good amulet with all the magic.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's very nice.
So each side has... Well, this side has 13 songs. So... Oh.
No, the album,
one side has 6 songs and the other side has...
It says on the back. Of the actual...
Oh, the actual...
The album itself, it says
on sleeves.
Yeah, it says side A and side B on the back under Spooky Sounds.
Spooky Sounds. So you're looking at altogether 22 songs for 2 vinyls. So roughly the amount of like how much is on an album or something. So
yeah.
But Ben, did you have a family movie you wanted to talk about?
Yes, I actually had Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. I know it's still like towards the end of October, beginning of December, kind of the time frame of it, but I feel like because it's Halloween Town, I figured you could still throw it in here.
Yeah, like, Amy, it's Halloween Town.
Like, does it count? Or like, is it like?
So the idea is that this town is perpetually in Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they celebrate on one particular day, but every day is Halloween to them, essentially.
Yeah.
So I figured it counts, mm-hmm. And because it's focused around Halloween. So,
it's not an identity crisis for the town's leader at all.
No, not at all.
No.
One of the great misconceptions about this movie is that people believe Tim Burton directed it.
Henry Selick.
Which it was actually Henry Selick. Henry Selick is the guy who directed it. He also did the recent Netflix drop, Wendell and Wild.
Jordan Peele.
With Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key.
Angela Bassett.
There's a lot of really good folks in Angela Bassett is in it as well. James Wong is in it.
As James Wong.
Essentially as James Wong. His puppet looks just like him and everything.
Including the makeover that he gets later on in the movie. It's very Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes.
Nice.
So good. So good.
But what about the movie, Ben?
Like, I liked it because, you know, the music's catchy, the theme song was catchy, and my son continuously loves watching it, you know, and you know, you can never get old off of it, I guess you could say. Like, it never gets old.
It does. Yeah. It never really does get old because it is one of those movies that is surpassing you know, being just iconic and just
almost feels like a classic though, because like you watch it every year and it doesn't feel like, oh, again. It's like, okay, let's watch it. Okay, let's watch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would definitely put like Nightmare Before Christmas in either a Halloween or a Christmas lineup of rewatches. Like just like how we were talking about with Christmas, you have like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Frosty Snowman, all those other ones. Yeah. I can see you putting Nightmare Before Christmas in there, as well as with Halloween. Like people who have their regulars, like watching their original Halloween and watching Halloween Town, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas could follow into that. For those people, Amy's rolling her eyeballs over there because she's like, I didn't get to see Halloween Town.
No, I'm agreeing that because Nightmare Before Christmas does straddle the line essentially of Halloween and Christmas. It falls evenly in there. And yeah. Ben's right. It doesn't seem to age ever, much like the Rankin-Bass Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It continually looks and feels like it just came out.
Yeah. And if you, Amy, or anyone disagree with the idea that this isn't a Halloween movie, I would offer you the argument that Disney always changes everything up around Christmas time to be more like Nightmare Before Christmas, which has like some Christmas elements, but it is still Nightmare Before Christmas.
Well, they put the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay on the Haunted Mansion before Halloween.
It's during the month of October.
Yeah.
When does it stop? Right after the 31st.
No, they keep it until January.
No, what?
What?
The overlay for the Nightmare Before Christmas, it stays all the way through all the holiday season. So it's starts in September and then it goes till January.
You might want to look that up on your Googles, but I don't know about that one. But no, talking about Nightmare Before Christmas, it's interesting because that was one of the first movies that I introduced Spencer to in terms of really listening to the music of the films. Yeah. Because we were watching it one time for, I believe it was for a Halloween episode.
Mm-hmm.
We were watching it and something happened there was a song and then something happened and you're like, wait, what the heck just happened? What's going on? Why is she like this? I'm like, she literally just sang a song about it like 5 seconds earlier. And you're like, well, I don't pay attention to those. I'm like, you should.
Dude. Well, if it's in the movie, you have to pay attention. No,
because other Disney movies,
it's true.
Do not have to listen to the songs. Like you can cut out most songs in most Disney movies and you're going to be fine. Like if you
okay,
we're
done with this movie, okay?
Yeah, this one.
But what about Tell Everybody I'm On My Way from Brother Bear?
I've never seen Brother Bear.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
See, now you're opening up more like cans of beans here because now we're going to have to...
Son of Man from Tarzan? Or the opening number from Tarzan?
Okay, the opening number. Son of Man.
I mean, but the opening
number... How about I'll Make a Man Out of You?
You can skip over that.
Yeah, nobody needs Donny Osmond.
Like,
well, time is racing towards him till the Huns arrive.
I mean, it's a great song, but like, it's not mandatory.
Did you? Never mind. There's that meme of like, what is LGBTQ or what does LGBT stand for? Let's get down to business. Something like that. It was great. Love you guys. but I honestly feel like The Nightmare Before Christmas holds a hand in both holidays so well that it works either way. You know, whether if you're a fan of Halloween and you're watching these vampires getting so upset because they can't find Jack and they're like, I looked behind the Cyclops' eye. Like, oh, that kind of stuff, that's fun and that's Halloweenish and that's like, that's straight up that, you know, Tim Burton-esque like aesthetic. Because it's the same kind of vibe you get like with Frankenweenie and stuff like that. So
Corpse's Bride and whatnot.
Corpse's Bride.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm still right about the Haunted Mansion Halloween overlay or the holiday overlay in Disney. It starts in September and it goes to January. So booyah.
Boom. Okay. Well, let's transition over to comedy. Comedy was a much more harder well to dig because it took us a little bit longer to find comedy Halloween movies without touching movies that'll essentially create a panic attack within Spencer, aka Hubie Halloween.
Oh yeah. Here's the thing. Gosh, I was gonna bring it up too.
No.
See, here's the thing. It's like hard when like I'm trying to find a movie to figure out what is this movie before I've watched it. So like it was hard to figure that out. And then, you know, like I have a hard time.
You do.
putting things into genres.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what your thing was, why you agreed so fast. Thanks.
I was like, I have a hard time. Yes, you do.
So you did watch the movie, though, right?
No. Wow. Hubie Halloween? Yes. No.
No.
No, that was not on this list.
It wasn't on this list for a reason.
Yes.
We specifically made every attempt to avoid Hubie Halloween and Boo the Madea Halloween and Boo 2.
Yeah.
So,
you had to name your movie Boo 2. Like, that just tells me everything.
It's Tyler Perry. Yeah. So, Amy, what was your comedy movie that you were able to find?
Goosebumps from 2015. Guess
another
who?
Jack Black movie.
It technically considers itself an American comedy horror film. Go figure.
Okay. Go figure.
But the concept is, of course, R.L. Stein and his daughter team up with some neighbor kids to stop the monsters that have all escaped his books, which I love that concept.
Yeah.
And also Slappy shows up and he's still makes me super uncomfortable. And mind you, this is the first Goosebumps one, not Goosebumps 2.
Slappy's Revenge. Yeah. No, that's what it's called.
That's the next book. So, but yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the next one's called Goosebumps 2 Slappy's Revenge.
Wasn't that the name of the actual book?
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought there was
a Goosebumps called Slappy's Revenge.
An episode about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
and a quick detour, the Goosebumps TV show. Mm-hmm. Woo! You could watch that year round. It was always spooky.
Yeah, that was so, like, you opened a whole nother tangent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Because Goosebumps was my jam. Like, growing up, you could watch Goosebumps on Fox,
yep.
And then you could watch Are You Afraid of the Dark on Nickelodeon.
Own all 40 of the original Goosebumps?
I have all 46. I'm missing maybe one. I'm missing about three of them, but I have about 46, 47 books of Goosebumps
at home
in the room in a box right now. I haven't been able to put, because I want to put them up like really cool on a shelf, but I have all of them. And I've been like just perusing through each one. It's like picking like out of a candy jar which one you want, like a whole jar of like Jolly Ranchers, and you're picking your favorite ones. It's great. I've got adult money. But no, that Goosebumps was just like, so growing up, and Ben can attest to this, growing up, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but what my parents could do, they would do to the best of their ability. And one of the things they would always get me around Christmas time is a new copy of the latest Goosebumps book. And so, like, it was always something simple and spooky and fun. Like, I would get that with like a little what was that mad scientist kit that you could buy?
Mad Lab?
The one that would make the bugs.
Yeah,
the
you could either
crawlers one.
No, not the creepy crawlers.
It was like creepy crawlers.
It was one where you could, like, because I don't know if you remember, Ben.
Yeah, it was like the Jello that you used to form.
Yeah, I had the brain mold for the Jello, yep. And I had the one where you can like put in the tablet and it would make like beakers that would go into a little small.
Yeah, I remember the commercial for that. But yeah. I don't remember what it's called.
And then you could drink the
Dr. Dreadful's food.
Yeah, that's it.
They would buy me one of those sets and a Goosebumps book, and I'd be set. And then the show came out, and I was like, I was all about it. And then after the show stopped, and then I got a little older, I still had a little bit more time with, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark, which was also another one of my jams. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually revisit Goosebumps until they started doing the R.L. Stein Haunting Hour, which was really fun, and it had a lot more of, like, real frights. I have yet to see the new Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes, like the one with Rafael Casal. He's actually in the first remake, or not remake, but the first new iteration of it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's on Paramount.
As much garbage as Paramount Plus tries to get me to watch, the one thing I might actually have an interest in, they're like, nah.
Yeah, Rafael Casal plays like a
you want to watch Ghost?
He's like a carnival ringleader, mm-hmm. And these kids come to the carnival, and it looks cool. Like, the poster itself looks really cool. And I'm really anxious to finally get into that. There's three of them now, because that's like a two or three parter one. There's another one about a haunted house, and there's another one that just came out this year about like a vacation or something. I don't know. But yeah, Goosebumps was my jam. And R.L. Stein was one of those guys that you're like, mind the mole. The man is a magician with words. Mm-hmm. Just it was that mole that always got me.
Really?
He has a big mole. But no, going back to your choice, Amy.
Yeah. So I kind of always have felt that R.L. Stine has been able to, as much as we've pointed out, bridge the gap between children and adults in establishing just scary enough.
Oh, yeah.
And whether it is the first Goosebumps, which I just realized the first Goosebumps movie does not actually take place on Halloween, but it feels like it. The second one does. Go figure. So, yay, zombie gummy bears.
Most of their books are based around Halloween. I'll give you that. I'll give it to you.
Because there's the big old carnival. Like, yeah. There's Fifi the vampire poodle. Like, for crying out sakes. Yeah, there's a book and there's a character that ends up in the movie that is literally a vampire poodle. And her name is Fifi. Yeah. And then there's the blob that ate everyone.
Yeah.
Which there's so many just kind of hearkening back to different types of monsters. And this movie is still one that it's funny. The problem that, and it's really difficult, I think we had this conversation off air, was that finding things, comedy and family, when it comes to Halloween-based movies, the line is often blurred. There's mm-hmm. nothing unless you're like, we're doing The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, and even then, it's like, they blend so close together. So finding something that's just completely comedy-based is very difficult. And in this, it felt like it was going to be, besides Ernest Scared Stupid, as close as I could possibly get. So.
Yeah. Well, and the great thing about this movie is the first one, because the second one, even though it's different a little bit than the first one in terms of its vibe, the first one has a lot of great moments. The first one, like one of the greatest parts about it is they have there's a whole scene of killer gummy bears. And it's hilarious. In the second one, yeah.
In the second one.
There's killer gummy bears, and they actually come together and form this, like,
giant one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's coming to murder you.
But a couple of the great things about the first one is that they actually allowed R.L. Stine to come in and read the script and offer suggestions when they were, you know, writing it. And he's actually in the movie. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, he runs into Jack Black's character. His name in the movie is Mr. Black, and Jack Black plays R.L. Stine. So it's kind of funny, that whole juxtaposition of the character and the whole movie. But they do a great job of, like, really kind of hearkening those vibes from the original books and the original TV series and so forth. So great choice.
Yay. I didn't break it.
In terms of family, in terms of comedy, my bad. It's hard to navigate. Okay.
I told you.
I wanted to go to 2015's really indie horror film called Gravy. If you haven't seen Gravy, it wouldn't surprise me, because Gravy was such an independent film that it kind of flew under the radar for a lot of people. It didn't make it into theaters, or did make it into theaters for like a really limited run, but it just...
Isn't that against your rules?
That was against your rules.
You know what? She had Goosebumps, okay?
Mine had a theatrical release.
Yeah. Yours wasn't on Halloween.
The second one was.
Okay. well, then I'll wait to the second one.
Wait. So does that mean, like, I'm, like, the one who has, like, a completely compliant list?
Spencer, are we going to talk about what's on your list?
Yeah, I will get to it. Let's talk about yours first, and then we'll talk about mine.
That's funny. Yeah, super limited. I don't see one there right now.
Super limited Gravy.
No, so it did make it in the theaters. It didn't last very long because of the fact that it was on a limited budget. It wasn't a limited release. It was because of the fact that, just like we've talked about with... don't do that to me. Blind Spotting was in theaters for a short time because they didn't market it enough.
It was a limited release as well. And
it wasn't, though.
It wasn't intentionally a limited release. Let's be honest. There was no plan for it to be a limited release, but it turned out to be.
So anyway, Gravy. written by the comedic actors from the show Psych. It's essentially a movie about, on Halloween, this restaurant is closing down and they're getting ready to celebrate one of their servers who's actually leaving the job to go to school to be a paramedic. That particular paramedic, named Carrie, is played by the incredible and illustrious Sutton Foster.
Yeah.
If you're not sure who Sutton Foster is, just look up Broadway and Sutton Foster and everything will appear, because...
Pretty much. Or you could watch Shrek the Musical, available on Netflix.
Yes.
See Fiona. You should see Fiona.
Which that's is funny worst. Watching her in that's this movie because in this movie she is like, she cusses and she yells and she fights and she kills people and stuff like that. And it's great because I'm like, hey, Sutton Foster really getting down with the sickness. This movie has a great cast of characters. They're all funny. Essentially, the restaurant gets taken hostage by these three cannibals who have this Halloween ritual that they do where every year they eat people. They're cannibals, and so they're essentially kind of playing games with the people that are there that they have tied up, and they eat most of them, and Sutton Foster ends out with a win in this one. It's got a really great plethora of folks. You got, like I said, Sutton Foster. You have Michael Weston. Paul Rodriguez is the owner of the restaurant. You have Gabory Sidibe, who played Precious from the movie. Mm-hmm. Precious. Sarah Silverman has a role as well. It's a really great and fun movie. And honestly, the aside from the premise that people are getting eaten, this movie's super like heavy on the comedy. It's heavy on making jokes. There's never really a point in this movie where you feel dread or worry about, oh my gosh, you know, this guy's going to come around the corner and do something. Because everything's up front. They're literally playing games with the people they're about to eat to see who they're going to eat in order.
That doesn't make me feel comfortable.
It should make you feel comfortable.
I'm not friendly with cannibals. I don't know about you, Ben, but I do not want someone to be like, guess who I'm going to eat next?
Which
are you good at bingo? We're going to find out. Like, no, thank you.
Great, you really threw me there. the director was actually the guy James Rodet, the main guy from Psych, the dude who actually I forget what he's the guy. He's the main guy character. From Psych. He's the main character, the guy who has the psychic visions or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So he actually directed the movie as well as co-wrote it with his co-star from Psych. But the biggest takeaway from this movie for me is the fact that we have Sutton Foster killing people in this movie and coming out to look more psychotic than you've probably ever seen her in any Broadway musical. But it's definitely a fun movie. It's definitely one that if you're outside of Amy, if you have the stomach for and the wherewithal to enjoy a good Halloween movie, this would be one that's all for laughs.
A cannibal laughing movie.
Exactly. See, now you're getting in the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
No.
That car is driving off.
It like I said, it really does bring things to a level where you're like, okay, I'm laughing at cannibals, having fun with folks and making jokes. I may need therapy for this, but it's okay because they're having fun and I can see they're having fun. And talking about the actors and performers, not the people in the movie.
Oh, okay. Just great point
just,
of clarification.
Just wanted to make sure I clarified that. Okay. So, speaking of which, did anybody else have a comedy movie they wanted to share?
I did.
Oh, boy.
So I saw this today. I actually really liked it. It's called Once Bitten from 1985. It's Jim Carrey's first leading role in a movie.
Aww.
And it has him in the odd choice of being like the straight man in the movie.
Really?
Yeah. Like they are not relying on his comedy chops at all, which was a crazy idea. But yeah, basically the main premise of this movie is like, there is this Countess Vampire woman who needs to drink the blood of a virgin three times before Halloween.
Same virgin or multiple virgins?
Same one. That works.
She just got to seduce the same one.
Why are you adding chain them up?
Why are you guys adding complicated caveats?
I thought it was different. I thought it would have been different.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Because I don't know what the recovery period on this is.
I'm like trying to support you here and you're adding to their chaos.
I was that level of confused. It is chaos. Yeah, so like she's trying to seduce Jim Carrey and like he has a girlfriend, but apparently he's just like, yeah, I'll have sex with you, whatever. It's a movie of incredibly odd choices and could not be made today because they say some things in this movie that would not fly in Hollywood today. And yeah, like, okay, so like this countess lady, she has a butler chauffeur guy who is this like black gay guy, and like Jim Carrey walks up to him, he's like, what's up, blood? And I just started laughing because I was like, oh my gosh, he would be canceled if people knew about this
movie. He'd be dead.
It's hilarious though. Yeah, it was very entertaining for reasons like that, especially the end. It has, this movie is aggressively 80s. Like, you turn it on and then like it kicks your door down and it's like, it's the 80s, baby, let's do some cocaine. Like, that's how this movie comes across.
Wow. Yeah, so like, they have cocaine in the movie?
No. But like, that's how it feels. But yeah, like this movie ends in like a dance battle. And it's like between the girlfriend and the cat's vampire lady, and they're both trying to like lure Jim Carrey.
Is it like he's the puppy and it's like, come to mommy?
Yeah, basically.
Oh no.
And then they run with around like her mansion at the end of the movie,
like Scooby Doo style.
Yeah, kind of.
Hey,
and okay,
yeah, it was very weird, very interesting. I really liked it.
it sounds pretty insane. I remember seeing this movie way back when. Mm-hmm. I had really no intention on revisiting it. And we had talked about it in our conversations about planning for this. And when you took it off your list, I was like, thank God. Okay. And then you saw it and you're like, hey, guess what I saw? I'm like, crud.
Yeah. Came right back.
Because it essentially does the whole like, oh, I get saved by having sex with somebody.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so he's not a virgin anymore. And oddly enough, in my ADD brain, I'm literally thinking of like the better variation than what we get with the book of It by Stephen King.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Removing the innocence. Like, he's no longer innocent. You know, it's.
But I actually thought that was like, one, an insane choice to just have sex in this vampire lady's house, but also the quickest way to fix this problem. I was like, oh, yeah. I guess that's all they had to do. Which seems
you remember
stupid.
That the next time someone comes up to you and says, someone's chasing me because I'm a virgin, help me.
No, that's a wildly different.
I'm just saying.
Like, I need to like not see the reflection in the mirror or some proof that they're turning into a vampire.
I'm push them in the sunlight, see if they sparkle or they burn. Either way.
If they sparkle, I'm running.
If they sparkle or they catch on fire, hey!
It's like, is your last name Cullen? Never mind. you're doomed. who did that movie, by the way?
I don't somebody
know. Oh, I do have to read this piece of trivia because
wait, there's
also
trivia?
Yeah, because like I saw this on the IMDb page and I thought it was just so awful and hilarious. Okay, so by the time this film was released, the writer Jeffrey House had blown through his initial earnings and had taken a job as a video store clerk. One day an oblivious customer remarked on this film, whoever wrote this shouldn't be worked in Hollywood anymore, and an incensed House retorted, you got your wish.
That is probably the only thing he lived for while working at that video shop. It's like just waiting for people to come in. Oh my gosh. Did you know that the role of the Countess was originally written for Cassandra Peterson?
There is a list of like people who turned the Countess role down because I think Kathleen Turner's also in that list
what?
Too. Yeah, she said no.
Yeah. Morgan Fairchild said no.
They're all going to say no. Come on. It's literally like, hello, I'm seducing virgins now. And you're like, what? No.
It's like, we're already doing that in Hollywood. So.
that one. Nope.
But it's one of those movies where it's kind of like in the annals of once, you know, once started type of thing. Like, oh, this is where I got my big break.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how big of a break he got for this one, but it was enough to kind of get him going because now Jim Carrey's being inhabited by the body or by the spirits of like old comedians and doing movies and stuff. So he's interesting. But no, did you at least enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I had a great time.
Okay.
I think that's why he brought it up.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. You saw this movie.
Mm-hmm.
about a countess vampire needing the blood of a virgin.
A male virgin.
A male virgin. Oh, did it have to be a male?
Yes, for her.
A male virgin. And this guy who's been trying to get to hook up with his girlfriend and ends up hooking up with her in someone else's house with your mom.
No. No, I watched this by myself. Okay. I'm not crazy.
Oh, wait, I was like, wait, what?
I was just, my brain you just turned you were off. Like, hey, I'm going to go visit my mom. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, whatever. I watched the Safe movie. The house with a clock in its walls. Because I'm not an insane person.
I would just say, I'm like... Oh, okay. It's like one of those moments where like the parents walk in on that exact moment where you don't want them walking in.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't want to relive any of that.
Oh, so it's happened before then.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Good.
Dun, 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 dun. Ham-fisted Segu.
Did you have one, Ben? Did you have a comedy movie or no?
No, I didn't actually. I was going to say Hubie Halloween, but... I think I watched it last year.
So
no, it's okay if you watched it last year. This is a recommendation.
Now, in terms of that movie, why did you watch that movie?
I was looking for something to watch, and I felt like whatever was already on Netflix wasn't really catching my eye, and I just saw like the preview. That's what I'm saying.
Everything else on Netflix was not enticing. So him.
I was and just like, this, oh, and so Adam Sandler, he's a good actor and everything. And I seen, you know, Happy Gilmore and all these other ones. So I was like, you know, why not? So I started watching it. I was like, oh, okay. Because, you know, they had Kevin James in there as the sheriff. And just the way they make him look was ridiculous. So I was like.
Was it another like Paul Blart situation?
He had like, he looked like he was probably from the 80s maybe.
Paul Blart.
Yeah, Paul Blart Mall Club. Mark Mall Cop.
McClurp. McClurp.
Blart. What? So what were some of the highlights of this movie since you mentioned it?
Yeah, so basically, like, the whole town makes fun of him. They throw eggs at him and everything because, you know, he has a lisp and he has, like, the mind of a child almost. And so, like, things start happening and he's trying to warn everybody, but at the same time, nobody's listening because... He's always coming to the sheriff's office, you know, telling them, oh, you know, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that, so-and-so did this. So they always marked it off. So in the end, they all ended up having respect for him because of something that happened at the end of the movie.
This isn't like a reflective movie of your own journey, is it? Just making sure. Like,
no.
Just wanted to make sure. I don't know. Adam Sandler doing more modern comedic films kind of seems to circle the same drain for me, whether if it's like grown-ups or he did one where he played like a movie agent, and I forget that one. That one was also on Netflix. It seems like with Adam Sandler, I feel like more of his more serious roles are the ones that we really need to be mindful of and watch. Like Hidden Gems apparently got great accolades.
Punch Drunk Love.
Spanglish was another one.
I really liked The Cobbler, which was on Netflix too, which had a much more serious tone than a lot of his stuff. But that was also coming right after Click. So,
Rain Over Me, like one of his most serious films, Rain Over Me was a really great movie. Him and Don Cheadle, Liv Tyler. What is her name? Will Smith's crazy wife.
Jada Pinkett Smith.
She's in it as well.
I'm covering you just in case she hears.
They're
this.
Still married?
Yeah.
That is the question of the century right now. Because it seems like they just that man deserves better. It's I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a chance before Halloween ends, but I don't know. It's still one of those ones that I'm just like, hey.
It was one of those ones where it was like, there's nothing else on. Well, might as well watch it kind of thing.
Hmm.
It wasn't like, ooh, this looks interesting.
No. Hey,
you know.
Transitioning over to the iconic genre that focuses around Halloween in horror, it's easy to kind of pick and choose some of the more prominent ones like Halloween, obviously, or Trick or Treat, which we reviewed extensively not too long ago. I want to know what you guys chose for your horror pick for our Halloween selection. Spence, did you want to go first?
I don't have one.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. I don't know what it is.
Number three.
Is it because
you know, I just talked about that.
Can't decide?
Oh, that. That, oh, I also didn't count that in this section either.
No, okay. I've given you an out.
Okay, no, I guess we can talk about it.
Oh, I have something to talk about.
Okay, go.
Okay, yeah, I guess so then we're talking about Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
Yes.
Which...
hilarious.
Yeah, the thing for me is this movie is hilarious to the point where I wouldn't have put it in this section. Again, I have problems categorizing
it. Yeah, it's a very typical 80s movie. In terms of its like B quality at this point.
Okay, that's what you mean. Yeah, this movie is confusing. Like, this is a part when like they were trying to turn this Halloween series into like an anthology thing, which is a weird decision on movie 3 to make, but okay.
Yeah. Because they made 1 and 2 with Michael Myers already. Yeah. Now you want to transition over to something else.
No, if they want to transition, you do that with movie 2.
Yeah, exactly.
And you put it out there. Then you could probably come back to Laurie if you wanted to in the future.
Absolutely. But which they did.
Yeah. Like.
real quick pause, because you just brought this up. I had texted Amy. Someone has taken the liberty and the time to create a full one film edit of Halloween, Halloween Kills, and Halloween Ends all into one cohesive film, and it is called the Corey Free Cut, where they've removed every element of Corey out of that last movie.
You'll find out and who Corey is later.
Like one cohesive film. So that last film is a much more abbreviated version.
So it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah. What? Pretty much.
You'll find out.
I'm going to link to that after this.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to Season of the Witch. So this movie follows a doctor, ? Because he's okay. He can just leave and go where he wants. I don't know what this man is doing with his life, really. No. Because he's confusing.
You know what's also interesting? Huh. He's a doctor. He bought his kids like least expensive masks, and I just realized it after watching it. Like, he bought the cheapest masks,
but his ex-wife bought the most expensive ones,
and I'm like, huh. Like, maybe he's not a real doctor. Maybe he's like that town doc in air quotes.
Oh, kind of like one of those like candy scraper people or something who just like walks in.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's probably what happened with him. So anyway, like, there's this guy who's coming into town and he's running from something. People are after him. He gets murdered. And then his daughter comes into town, meets up with the doctor, and she's like, you have to help me with my dad because I think someone murdered him. And so, like, they go and check out this factory where they found out that he went to that was producing these masks for children. And then a whole lot of nonsense happens in this factory town where, like, people are apparently all robots and nobody lives there.
Yep.
It's the real twist of the movie. But, like, it turns out the leader of this factory.
Shamrock Company.
Yeah, the Silver Shamrock Company. Whose theme song is just London Bridge is Falling Down, by the way. Which... totally gets stuck in your head. So it turns out that he stole a piece of Stonehenge, which was mentioned earlier in the movie.
Which is really, like, I'm glad that he glossed over that really quick.
I want details. How did you steal Stonehenge?
Here's the thing. If he told you how, it would probably be more ridiculous and add more questions to the why and the how than I think you would get answers.
But I have too many questions on whys and hows throughout this movie already. Because, like, okay, his main evil villainous plan is he has put a piece of Stonehenge along with
the electronics. Moonstone. It has a special name. They were saying it in the TV bulletin. Sorry, it bugged me that much. Like, I was in the same boat with you. I was like, he stole a very large stone. And he made mention that it's this one particular stone.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, you'd be surprised what we had to do to get it here. And you're like,
what did you do to get it here? It's a giant rock. Like, people will notice.
It weighs tons.
Yeah.
Literally.
We don't even know how they got it there.
So they got the whole slab?
Yes.
Not the not a piece of it. No, they got the actual slab from Stonehenge. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, these robots are not that smart.
They're not that smart.
They get crushed by cars that robots. Literally just back into them.
Oh yeah, that was hilarious. Where the what? Robot was like, there was a you car coming, and it was like gonna crush. The robot's just like,
and then it just falls over, and it's like, oh. It's dead.
Like, they're made out of tinfoil. Mm-hmm. Like
tinfoil and baby food. Get it right.
Because he spent all that money getting the stone over here. He didn't have time to, like, reinforce these robots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, his main plan is to distribute these masks with technology, like little chips in, like, the mask and, like, this moonstone element. And then when they play, like, this one commercial on Halloween night, it kills the children and causes a whole bunch of bugs and snakes to come out of their bodies because the mask is, I guess, converting their bodies into that. And then the bugs and snakes kill other people who are in their vicinity. And that's where I'm don't understand, why do we want this? She only says, like, oh, yes, we used to have sacrifices in the past. And I'm like, okay, are these, like, sacrifices to, like, some sort of demon god? Or
because it makes this illusion that the owner of the Shamrock Company is a witch.
Yeah. Warlock.
Oh. And that he's like, back in the day, we used to sacrifice people all the time in the olden days. And we're going to kill the children. And it's like, what?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Why? What do you get? Like, is there some sort of power you get for this? Or
so you said the people in the town were robots.
Yes, in the town with the factory.
Oh, so not the town where the kids were in.
Correct. No. Like, they shipped across America.
Okay, yeah. Because I was confused because, like, how can they be robots and there's kids?
So the thing is, these masks, which this apparent plant is located in Northern California, the general area of Northern California. Yes. It doesn't give you a town. Or it doesn't give you a location per se until you get there, and it's like some fictitious town.
It doesn't exist.
And they ship these masks all over the United States.
Yes.
And they're going to do a quote-unquote giveaway at 9 o'clock so that everybody needs to be in front of their TVs.
With their masks on
so they can watch the giveaway. The thing is, the first question I was like, what about time zones? You got midnight on the East Coast. You're really going to let kids stay up? And every smart parent is like, let the kids go to bed. We'll just watch it and make sure, and we'll see, you know, if they win or whatever. It's like, who's going to let their kids stay up until midnight? The entire East Coast is still alive because of smart, logical thinking.
Yeah. And even if they did it by like 9 p.m. on each time zone, by the time it's 9 p.m. on the East Coast, someone's going to say something.
Someone should have called somebody.
Like, yeah. Like, and that should be a thing of like, oh, hey, I think there's something wrong with these commercials. Pull them.
Yeah.
Like, it was really bizarre. And so at the end of the movie, like, the doctor guy, he's like calling into the station to like tell them to turn off the commercials. And like, they turn it off on two of the channels, but not the third one, because apparently one station controls three channels, which I guess is a thing.
And that one person, whoever controls them, may or may not control all the stations across the United States, because there's no intention behind the whole idea of like, oh, we're just saving people in this small town of this small, you know, area, region.
But the thing that made me so angry is that this guy is calling, right? There is a kid right in front of him, and this kid's changing the channel so that like he can see that the commercial's still on. Like, you said no, just turn off the TV. Like, save the kid that's right in front of you. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You just rip the plug out of the wall. You're fine. Go home, kid. Or maybe not. If you have brothers and sisters, they're dead. Right. Stay here.
It was a really hard swallow to see this, especially after like everything that Halloween did. And I mean, not so much like Halloween 2 is not on the same caliber at all as the first Halloween. But this is a huge departure, even in terms of quality and in terms of like intentionality for what they're trying to get across. Because at the end of the movie, you don't know if he's able to get that last channel taken off. It ends right there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But it's like,
talk about a cliffhanger.
This is a really sketchy kind of, you know, idea to be putting out. Like, you know what, kids? Next year when it's Halloween, be careful what masks you buy. Because like, no, I'm pretty sure if they tried to market those masks during Halloween, nobody bought them.
Here's the thing, though, is that like the little special chip with the moonstone on it.
Yeah,
it's a tag on the back of the mask.
It's a massive tag.
Yeah,
it's like, bigger than three pogs stacked together.
Yeah, it's something you would look at and you'd be like, "Oh, let me take this off."
Yeah,
because it looks weird on there otherwise. But everyone apparently left it on there.
Yeah, it would make more sense if it was like more part of the mask, make it look like it's part of it, like it was a pimple or some kind of like kind of thing, but not like attached.
No, it stood out.
That's
dumb.
Yeah.
All right, what about you, Amy? What you got for horror Halloween movies?
So as we all understand, I am not a big horror person.
It's true.
But
we
I
still
am
accept her.
Vaguely, I get taunted. I'm aware of this. There is a hazing and the ritual continues year round. But I did want to jump on to a movie that is wonderful. It happens on Halloween and it is a horror anthology. So 2007 Trick or Treat by Michael Dougherty. It is probably brilliantly scary in places that you didn't expect it to be scary. It honors Halloween in such a great way, and it was the one that actually made me realize that I was afraid of like my big problem is house horror, or like it's in, like it's inside the house. Mind you, I had seen the first Halloween by the time I saw Trick or Treat. And I was like, oh, it's just because he's, you know, this unknown shape that's coming to murder her. I didn't realize that it was actually, you know, inside the house kind of thing when, you know, we get to one of those last stories and Sam legit comes in for, was a guy named Krieg, the bus driver.
Yeah.
Like when he's chasing him in the house, I was like, he's in the house and he can't get out. And I can't handle this. And I'm like,
the only reason why I'm letting this one go through is because she wasn't at the review that we did. So this is her personal choice on this one. So that's why I'll allow it.
You'll allow it? Here's the other gimme. So on the technicality, this just had a theatrical release.
Exactly.
Because originally it was not screened in theaters at all. It was only screened at different film festivals. And the first one was the Numbutathon, right?
Butt-numathon,
2007.
Or as what people call the BNet. Which nobody now goes to BNets anymore because Henry Knowles is in Big Caca.
Yeah, so, I thought it was Harry.
Harry Knowles, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about Henry Selick. So Harry Knowles, you're right.
But yeah, so this actually, October 6th of this year, had its official theatrical release. But ever since it came out, it had such rave reviews, and it follows, Ben, you have seen it, yes?
Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Because you had the look of like, I'm listening, and I'm like, uh-oh, wait. You've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
One of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's so wonderful and it's unexpected and it's very circular in the way that it's shot too, with how the stories all line up and everything. So it scared me enough and it will continue to still scare me and make me very aware that I should always follow the rules for Samhain.
Well, when you're looking at, even just looking at the cast, I mean, you have Anna Paquin, you have Dylan Baker, you have Brian Cox, you know, in these leading roles. We actually just had Sam Todd, who plays the who did the character of Rhonda, come to Sinister Creature Con.
Oh, cool!
So she was here for that. There was so much in this movie. Leslie Bibb as well. She's a famous actress who has a small role in this movie.
She did.
She did
from the jump.
But this movie was such like just a cult. It became an instant cult classic for a lot of fans because of a lot of the promotion that went into it. A lot of the information. What is that channel? It's an indie movie channel. It might have been IFC. I'm not sure, but IFC was putting out a lot of the promo videos for the movie before the movie came out and started doing its rounds.
Yeah, I remember you showed me like when it was still on the film circuit, but it was for Halloween and it was this like collection of somebody had spliced together a compilation of all the different commercials, and I was just like, oh. Yeah. And
then which you're was like, all for IFC. Like, I think it was Midnight IFC or IFC Midnight, I think. One of those.
Yeah, so Eddie was like, Amy, you should watch this. It's a horror movie, but not a horror movie. And I'm like, I don't wanna. And then I took the plunge and I was like, okay, I can get behind this until that last story. And I was like, okay, no, I can't get behind this. I can't handle this.
Well, and this movie holds so much information in it in terms of the origins of Halloween, how certain folk keep it holy and solemn in its time, you know, keep it sacred when it comes around. The idea of the rules, like you said, the certain rules for Halloween, recognizing, you know, you don't blow out your pumpkin until the night's over. You know, don't take on the decorations until the next day.
Always check your candy.
Always check your candy. Oh, yeah. You know, these rules are just synonymous with most folks who regularly celebrate this holiday. And this movie kind of just gives fans an opportunity to see it all put into a visual medium that they can celebrate.
Yeah.
Do you remember seeing this movie, Spence?
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't it part of the initial like Halloween watching season we started on the podcast?
Oh, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
It was part of that smart horror series that we did. But yeah, what just in your short ability, abbreviated response, what did you think of the movie? Because we did a review on this, honestly.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go too much into detail, but
yeah. No, I remember I loved this movie because like, I liked, like, you know, the anthology part of it, but I just liked how it wasn't, when people were in danger in this movie, they were not being super stupid about it. Hmm. They were making intelligent decisions of like, I heard something, peer over, nah, gonna go over here.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. It's definitely one that carries different elements of the fear that people can have for Halloween and kind of put it on its head, as well as having unknowingly a running thread of a plot line going through all the movies, because it all takes place all on the same night, all in the same town. And they cohesively kind of layer over each other at times. So Sam is definitely one of those types of characters that people just gravitate to once they see him, because he's let's be honest, Sam is lovable. I would want Sam to live in our house. That's all I'm saying. I mean,
he does. You've got that candy.
Oh, that's right. I do. I have the little candy statue of Sam in my room.
And he's not super spooky once he takes his mask off either, to be very honest.
I mean, he's just a pumpkin-headed, sovereign kid.
Like, he looks innocent before that. Like, he looks like one of those kids.
Yeah.
Like, because what? He's supposed to be like the spirit of Halloween kind of thing, the essence of it as he walks around. And then, like you said, like when he's going after the bus driver in the house, he rips off his mask, and all of a sudden you see the face, and you're like, oh, that's what you look like underneath. And it's like, okay, that's different. You know?
I like it. And I'm super excited that Michael Dougherty's announced that they're working on the sequel, because that is something that's been long overdue. And unfortunately, it's like Amy mentioned, he just literally got
a theatrical release,
and that's you know, it's unfortunate, because that means it's gone already, what, 15 years?
Yeah, 15 years,
you know, 15 years without people in the mainstream audience seeing this movie.
So much other garbage that they put in the movies that they couldn't find space for this one.
But I feel like because they took so long, I think it just made it that more exciting to see it on the big screen. It's like when Jaws came back for the big screen, those of us that never saw it on the big screen, it's like, okay, we already saw it on a little screen, let's go watch it on the big screen.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the same thing with this movie. And I think he probably did even better because of that. Because like people like us, like, oh yeah, we like this movie. Hey, so-and-so. Hey, let's go watch this. Hey, so-and-so, let's go watch this. And what do? You end up bringing a crowd in.
Yeah.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, if you guys wanted to know, the actor who played Sam in the movie, it was the little boy who was peeking in during the changing scenes of those ladies that were going to the party.
Really?
That little boy was that's Sam. Yeah, that's the actor who plays Sam.
Aww.
Or who did
his
play
little
Sam.
Cameo.
He's much older now, obviously. But
yeah. I mean, 15 years. He can drink now.
Going over to my choice for horror, honestly falls in the realm of going back to what Amy had talked about with Goosebumps, and then bringing in the conversation about Are You Afraid of the Dark? Growing up as a kid, there was this book series that we had that really held a lot of young people's attention pertaining to scary stories, because they weren't just scary, they were macabre. They were very out there.
It's and, the pictures that were the worst part for me.
Yeah.
I will 100% get on that boat.
And I'm talking about 2019's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. If you remember those books and you remember the images in those books, this was a pretty haunting book to have. All four of them, I believe there was four. And the story behind like a lot of these books, it's pretty epic, because the writer for these books actually had to fight against the mothers and the parents who were out there during the 80s, because it came out during the late 80s, had to come out. He had to fight against them who were like pushing to get this book banned from libraries. Mm-hmm. They were pushing to get, you know, these stories out of kids' hands because it was too scary. It had, you know, witchcraft and sorcery. It was the whole D&D scare kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he had to fight against that. I actually have the documentary on my, I have the documentary in my film history where he talks about it at length. They talk about the fight, the struggle for him, even just keeping a lot of the success of the book to himself, to his estate. So the fact that we actually get a full-on movie, that does the original books justice, to be quite frank, because a lot of the stories, they're separated out. They're, you know, self-contained stories. What they did with this film was they allowed, kind of like how Goosebumps did it, they allowed each one of the elements of the scary parts of the books, like each story, to be a part of the journey for the kids that are in this book. Mm. And it has a really unique and unassuming cast. Michael Garza, who plays Ramon, Zoe Margaret Coletti, who plays Stella, Austin Zogier, who plays Chuck. These individuals who are very unassuming actually really do a great job. Oh, Dean Norris is also in it. Dean Norris, if you don't know, he's the guy from Breaking Bad, the brother-in-law. But this movie's so great, and it really does carry a lot of the heart from what people don't remember from those books. And yeah, I was really intrigued and really honestly hoping that they are still planning to make a sequel, because I honestly don't know if they are. Mm-hmm. It leaves you kind of on a cliffhanger. You're like, oh, this is supposed to go somewhere, like the way the ending goes. So, yeah, we all actually reviewed this movie at length on the show. What?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago.
And I wasn't there. Don't worry. I was just like, wait, what?
I can tell you the year is 2019. Yay. but the movie is just, it's so great because a lot of the creatures of it, a lot of the horrific parts of it, look just like in the movie, look just like what you would experience in the books.
Yes.
Especially like the pale woman. What was her name? I forget.
Oh my gosh. I don't know, because the one that haunted me for forever, because I remember reading these books. I remember the giant hype about how they were like super sketchy. And my librarians, even my private school, they had taken them off the shelves, but the public library didn't. and I remember cracking it open before my parents could find it. And I sat down and I had read The Red Spot. And the Red Spot story, which shows up in the movie,
yeah,
is the girl that thinks she has a pimple and it explodes on her face and it's spiders. Yeah. And I remember seeing that image and I lost my flipping marbles. And I'm like, I'm going to wash my face every single day. I'm going to take care of myself. Nothing's going to happen to me. And like, it was... And then seeing it in the film, I was like, oh my God, it's coming back. It's coming back. And
it
like,
triggered memories.
Oh, it was bad. Oh. It was bad.
The really great thing about this movie, one of the best things it does, is it doesn't hold anybody sacred in this movie.
Yeah.
There is not anybody who's like, oh, that's a key performer. They're the ones who are going to make it at the end, or that's this person, whatever. Everybody's on the chopping block. Like the woman that has the red spot, like Amy was talking about, that's the sister of one of the main characters.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you're going to do that? And at school? And it's like, it's crazy. The whole scene, you know, even you got to see the movie. It's really great. And I honestly am appreciative of Alvin Schwartz's work that he did and every effort that he put into it. I just, like I said, I'm really hoping that we get kind of the whole... same trick-or-treat situation, like treatment, hopefully not as long, but we do get a sequel to this movie because I feel like it deserves it fully.
Well, they did leave you on a cliffhanger, like you said, so, yeah. You know.
Pale lady.
Well, it was close. Yeah. Pale woman, pale lady.
Do you remember?
Yeah, is that with the red light?
Yeah, with the red light and the lady walking down the hallway.
No.
But yeah, I mean, and... The whole premise of a lot of these movies, because they surround the idea of Halloween or whatnot, it does give us an opportunity to celebrate this holiday in the ways that people can express that, you know, excitement and allure and whatnot. Did you have one, Ben?
I do, actually. I have the 2010, The Final.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's...
Well, because I don't know if it was during Halloween or it was because it was a it was a, not a masquerade but a costume party.
No, no, it takes place Halloween night.
Okay, yeah.
So for those who don't know, there was a time way back during the mid 2000s, late 2000s, before the 2010s, where movie theaters were doing what's called the 8 Films to Die For Festival. It was it was called
The 8 Films to Die For
Festival?
No, there was a festival name for it, but essentially the whole thing was called
Horror Fest.
I think it was Horror Fest.
Yeah.
But essentially what it was movies, so main movie theaters aren't really allowed to play unrated or rated X movies during regular hours.
This movie was not rated X, just so you know.
No.
Okay.
But a lot of horror movies, because of their premise and because of what it has, they typically, from the MPAA, receive an unrating. So when you have an unrating, you can't just show it up at theaters and whatnot in your local theaters and have it play with the rest of them. Nowadays, just go to Amazon Prime or Netflix. So for the equivalent of like 1 to 2 weeks, they would take out a couple days and they would like for 1 to 2 days, they would show one movie on certain screens. The next 2 days, they would take another one, ultimately up to they got to the 8 movies. And people would come in and people would watch them. And so this actually was around like the third or fourth iteration of 8 Films to Die For. This is actually one of them. So I actually remember going to the first year's 8 Films to Die For, and I saw
The Grave Digger, I think, or The Grave Encounter.
No, Grave Encounters wasn't one of them. There was a couple. I know one of them had The Great Hambino from The Sandlot. It was like something called The Dark Ride or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, on the boardwalk.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Tell me why you chose this movie.
So this movie is basically about a group of kids that are bullied nonstop throughout school. So what they decide to do is to take matters into their own hands and have revenge. So they watched all these movies about torture and everything. So the night of, there was a party. So they spiked the juice, put them to sleep. When they woke up, the kids that were bullies, it's like the school, they ended up torturing them one by one, but they mostly picked like the main ones. Like for one kid, it was the quarterback of the football team. And then for another one, it was a girl that always laughed about her looks, the way she looked. So she got her back the same way as like acid and foam, putting it all over her face, making her deformed. And as far as the football player, his back got severed, so he could never play football again, something he liked doing. Ooh. So it's a really good movie. You kind of already knew which way it was going right off the bat, but to see everything happening, it's like, dang. Because the scary part is the realism of it is that, you know, what these kids go through, and this is a part of probably like what they feel like, oh, well, if I could do something, this is what I would do to so-and-so because he bullied me. He would do this or he would do that.
It's one of those movies where you think of all those kids who go through that type of situation in high school, probably from freshman to senior year, all their entire lives are just filled with being picked on, being belittled, being tortured by these people, and what the depths of that depravity leaves the child at this point as, you know, this teenager. And you see, you kind of get a sense of what they're willing to do and what they choose to do. And it's interesting because on one side, yes, there's a good amount of torture in it. But on the other side, you also see the recognition of, you know what, this is not okay to do, but this is kind of the reflection of how I feel I've been treated my entire life kind of thing. Mm. It's a head scratcher because you have to really kind of see the forest for the trees in this one. And it is a little difficult to watch through, but the gist of it is there in terms of there's a statement at the tail end of it where essentially they have a suicide pack, and if they ever got found out, they would all end themselves. And one of the guys is like, you know, we're not the only ones. This isn't the last time this is going to happen. And, you know, he goes. And you see, like, at the beginning of the movie, there's like this black and white scene where you have somebody showing up to a truck stop barbecue joint and she's afraid to get out of her car or whatever. And then at the end, you come to realize it was that one girl who got acid on her face, and people look at her and scream in terror and whatnot. And the ramifications of essentially the idea is the ramifications of her choices being manifested in what she has now going on, where she's now the one who's being picked on and pointed at and treated like a monster.
Yeah.
It's a little rough. It's obviously, if it's for that horror festival that he films to die for and it's unrated, there's a reason why.
Yeah.
So, but it is definitely one of those movies that really you have to kind of see with.
You said the final from 2010?
Yeah.
Almost. It has a rate.
Does it now?
R.
Huh.
Oh, they probably finally put one on there.
That one?
Hey, that's the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Got rated five. Well,
it's probably like gravy. You have to have the stomach for it to watch it, I guess.
Very true, right, Amy?
No pun intended by the name.
But like I said, this is just a few of our choices for watching your viewing pleasure for Halloween, and for if you're looking for something to watch to kind of carry the sentiment of the spirit of the holiday after the fact. Like I said, these are movies that really do highlight our choices and what we see, kind of like with Amy's choice with Trick or Treat. We've talked about it extensively, but the opportunity where Amy got to see it and be able to kind of talk about it now, that's kind of what this holiday is about. That's kind of what this episode was about, and being able to just give our thoughts. So, but that about wraps up another great episode of The Film Philosophers Halloween Special Edition. Again, you can check us out on our website at filmphilosophers.com. You can also check us out on the socials over at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmphilosophy101. There you can find us posting all of our great stuff about movies, episodes, and all of our great content. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, and iHeart, where you can tune into your heart's desire and listen in. Let us know what you think. Give us your thoughts in the comments. Even give us a 5-star review. Hey, I think we've earned it. Right, Spence?
Yes, we have.
Thanks, Skippy. I want to thank the guys who are here for this episode. Spencer, obviously. Amy, thank you for being part of this special episode. Ben, thank you as well.
Yes, sir.
This holiday, around this time, please be safe as you go out, as you go trick-or-treating, as you go celebrating this holiday. Make sure you have a great time and you are mindful. Like the rules Amy said, check your candy, check yourself, and make sure you have a great time. So from all of us here at the Filmphilosophers, we want to wish you a great, happy, spooky, and wonderful Halloween.